ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय for this opportunity to be here on the holy occasion of the appearance day of Lord Sri Ramchandra in Sri Sri Radha Ras Bihari Temple, where Srila Prabhupada, from the love of his own heart, called Lord Rama, Sita Lakshman, and Hanumanji to bestow their infinite mercy upon all the people of Bombay. Srila Prabhupada's vision for bringing Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman is something very deep that we may never understand. But if we contemplate because Sita Ram are so infinitely popular in India, Srila Prabhupada invoke the presence of this form of the Lord to attract all of our hearts. Also, because Lord Rama especially appeared in the role of a human being to exhibit the divine qualities in all of his relationships by setting the highest possible examples, it is very beneficial to understand from Sri Ram, who is one of the most merciful, opulent expansions of Krishna, in Washington, D.C., in the United States of America, Srila Prabhupada also installed deities of Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman. Because the Lord in this form established Raj Ram, perfect government. His example of a ruler, of how he personally lived and how he ruled the state, leading everyone back home, back to Godhead. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains how when Sri Ramchandra left this world, he took everyone back to Godhead with him. But it wasn't difficult, because under his rule, almost everyone was a great devotee or a pure devotee, because he prioritized so much. Practically everyone in his kingdom had perfect etiquette, perfect behavior. Why? Because he lived with perfect etiquette and behavior. Yad yad acharati sreshthas tad tad evet rojana sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. What great people do, the common people will follow. Guru na sasyat, swajina na sasyat, pita na sasyat, janani na sasyat. The Lord has said one should not be a guru or a political leader, what to speak of a king, or even a parent, unless one could give such an example in their life and impress such a priority on one's subordinates that they will never take birth again in this material world. Because Lord Sri Ramchandra was such an ideal example in every way, practically the whole world followed his example. And he led everyone back to his eternal abode of Vaikuntha. Srila Prabhupada emphasized many times the importance of political leaders taking up the example of Lord Rama and wanting to show what will be the result if we do so. If the leaders prioritize the cleansing of the heart, the awakening of love of God, and live by those principles, with compassion, considering every citizen, one's own son or daughter, like a father, that is Ramraj. Srila Prabhupada had very, very deep vision. He was convinced that if the devotees just live by these principles themselves, they could make nations Krishna conscious. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, out of the deep love and compassion of his heart, he installed Sitaram, Lakshman, and Hanuman in Washington, D.C., the capital of America, to show if you want good government, follow him. There's no other way. If you really want to do good for the people, here is the example. And Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman also in New Delhi, capital of India. How do you roll? So with your permission, we will speak something on this holy day about the appearance of Lord Ramchandra. Krishna tells in Gita, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanama dharmasya tadatmanam svijamyaham. Whenever there is a rise in irreligion and a decline in religion, I descend. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami juge juge. To annihilate the miscreants, protect the pious, and reestablish the true principles of religion, I advent myself. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvata yakvadeham punarajanma naiti mam esi sorjuna. And one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities will never have to take this birth in this material world again, but will attain my eternal abode. Our acharyas tell us that Krishna can protect pious and reestablish principles of religion and annihilate miscreants through his energies, through his empowered representatives. But he especially appears personally to fulfill the desires of his devotees and to perform such wonderful pastimes that anyone who hears about them for all time will be attracted, and their love for the Lord will naturally awaken. The setting in which the Lord appears is always something extraordinary. It's usually some miserable crisis. Yes? There's not many times when we see in the scriptures where the Lord appears when it's a nice sunny day and everything's going well and everyone's happy. It's usually a serious emergency that's so impossible to overcome that no one, no human being, no king, no rishi or sage, not even the demigods can deal with it. That's a crisis. We may have some crises in our temples or in our family lives. But what are they? They don't merit the Lord to come. We could work it out ourselves. But what happens when the entire Earth planet is submerged on the bottom of the Garbhodak Ocean? And Hiranyaksha is just going around with his club, just conquering everyone, conquering Varuna and his brother Hiranyakashipu, terrorizing the entire universe. What to do? The demigods had no power to take the earth out from under the water. Brahma himself, in this serious crisis, he meditated on Lord Vishnu, because even he had no power to help. Can you imagine? Lord Brahma lives 311 trillion years. The father of everyone, of all living beings within our particular universe. What is his power? What is his knowledge? But even he was helpless to help the situation. All he could do is pray to the Lord, meditate on Lord Vishnu. And then the Lord just comes out of Brahma's nose. There's a little boar and starts growing. It dives into the ocean, pulls up the earth, puts it back in its place, fights Hiranyaksha and kills him. Matsyavatar, there was massive floods. The entire world was going to be under an ocean. That's a serious crisis, don't you think? Here we think there's a flood, the railways don't run, and the buses aren't running, and the sewage is backing up, and airports closed. Everybody's frantic. But here we have the entire world is deep under an ocean, such a flood. It's an emergency. Satyavrat Muni, the Lord was so pleased with his pure devotion, he arranged for him to make a boat and bring all different people in it. And the Lord appeared as Matsyavatar to protect the Vedas, protect life, and protect his devotees. And Hiranyakashipu, he was really, really terrible. He was terrorizing the universe. Defeated Indra. He had all the demigods as his obedient servants. Even the sages and rishis who he allowed to live were his obedient servants. And in so many ways, he tried to murder Prahlad. It was an emergency. The Lord appeared as Narasimhadev. And Kamsa, Jarasandha, Salva, all these demons were just ruling the earth. And poor Vasudev and Devaki were imprisoned. Mother Earth prayed to Brahma, "I'm helpless. These demons are overcoming everything, everywhere." The demigods and Brahma, helpless, they went to the ocean of milk and prayed to the Lord, "Please save us. This is an emergency beyond us." And Krishna appeared at midnight. The Lord wants to show us that the material world is a place of tragedy. However you want to try to rationalize or adjust through science, technology, medicine, philosophy, psychology, New Age thinking forms, whatever you want to do, Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avatu norjana mamupetyatu konteya punar janmana vidyate. This material world's a place of misery. And ultimately death has to come. I was speaking yesterday how when I was in the Himalaya foothills on bank of Ganga, it was such a nice day. It was in the evening. It was cool, but not too cool. And the water was so fresh, sparkling clean, flowing on all sides around this little rock I was sitting. It was beautiful. I saw a hawk. Way up ahead, over above, its wings stretched out, soaring through the airways. All these little birds were flying around, much lower than him. They were just chirping, flying, winging here and there. But far above them in the sky, the hawk was just gliding. He looked like the emperor of the sky, with such confidence, no fear. His glistening green eyes were gazing and scanning the river. He hovered lower and lower and lower until he was just a few meters over my head. I was looking up at him. Such a beautiful creation. Reddish brown feathers with some very, very delicately, artistically designed white stripes on his wings. He was glistening in the sun. Suddenly, he just plunged right into the water of Ganga, went underwater. I saw just some flurry going on, and he came out like a king who had just won, who had just conquered the world. In the claws of his talons was a fish, about a foot long. That fish was flapping and struggling, completely bewildered. The hawk effortlessly glided into the horizon with the fish. So that was quite a scene. And I was contemplating, what is Krishna trying to show me? And it was quite obvious that I'm just like that fish. In fact, we're all just like that fish. That fish did not know anything in life except being in the river. And those kinds of fish, they travel in schools, large groups of other fish. They just swim together. They protect each other. He was born and raised with his little school of fish. His friends, his relatives. It was just like any other day, just swimming in the current of life. Routine. When suddenly the hawk rips him out of the only environment he knows, rips him completely out of his comfort zone. It's a tragedy. Doesn't that happen to all of us? Yudhisthira Maharaj was asked, what is the most amazing thing? Yudhisthira Maharaj said, everyone in certain, like that fish, everyone sees so many other people dying, but nobody takes serious that it could happen to me at any moment. The hawk of fate can rip us out of our comfort zone through crisis, tragedy, failure, death, through unlimited means at any moment. Riding in a train, driving in a car, sitting home, even sitting here in class, you can get a call that the person you love most is dead. Or your heart might just stop beating. Or your business can fail and you have nothing. Or you could find out someone you love is cheating on you. Crisis comes, if you consider all species of life, billions of times a day. And yet we just go on with our routine life, thinking everything's all right. Yes, yes, I read in the papers this and that. Everyone else is getting attacked by that hawk, but not me. But please know, the hawk of fate has his glistening green eyes on you and me. Hare Krishna. We should not be complacent. We should not just go on with our duties, go on with our life in an ordinary, routine way. In the Bible, Lord Jesus said, either be hot or cold. But if you're lukewarm, I spit you out. Hare Krishna. Krishna says in Gita, Vyavashayatmaka budhir ekeha kuru nandana bahushaka hyanantascha budhayo vyavashayanam. Those who are on this path, my path, they are resolute in purpose. They have determination, dritavrata. They're not routine. A devotee lives in the present moment. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say we should live every day as if it was our last day. You wouldn't be routine. Yes, when you're driving a car or you're being driven by a car here in India, you're just watching the scenery and falling asleep. Yes? But if the car falls off a cliff, will you be watching the scenery or falling asleep? You'll be very much awake. The end is very likely to be now. And you won't be chanting inattentive rounds. The because that when you're driving in a routine way, driving down the highways between Bombay, Pune, Hare Krishna, Ram. When you're falling down a cliff, falling off one of those ghats, and you're chanting from your heart of hearts the holy name. Why does that have to happen? Why do we have to be falling down a cliff to chant the holy names from our heart of hearts? We're supposed to be doing it all the time. We should padam padam yadvipadam natesham. We should understand there's danger at every step. There's a cliff at every step that we could fall off. We should prepare ourselves. That doesn't mean living in fear or paranoia. It means living in bliss. It means taking shelter of Krishna and feeling the real fulfillment and ecstasy of Krishna. Because we understand the necessity to take shelter of Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj took shelter. No eating, no sleeping, just Hari Katha for 7 days. Prabhupada said, none of us know for sure that we even have 7 days. The hawk of destiny could at any moment rip us out of our comfort zone. Totally change our life. Or end our life. Prabhupada warned us. This economy, which is based on oil, petrol, he said it can't survive. He was saying this in the 1960s. He was emphasizing that soon the oil supply is going to run out. And in those days, when he was saying that in America, petrol was 28 cents a gallon. Yes? Now, in those days, a dollar was worth 8 rupees, so what is 28 cents? How many rupees? Huh? About 2 rupees. How much is a gallon of gasoline now? A gallon means 4 liters. Huh? 4,000 rupees now. Used to be 2 rupees. Anyways, whatever you can figure it out yourself. But I can only, because of my mathematical abilities are like 0 + 0 = 0. That was my worst subject in school is math. But then when I joined the Gaudiya Math, I thought, this type of math I like very much. Gaudiya Math. But when Prabhupada was saying it, we believed him, but we didn't take it seriously. There was just oil everywhere. But Prabhupada knew it. And now we see some of the most intelligent geologists, politicians, they're telling. It's going down. The entire planet's supply. That's why the prices are going up. And what's going to happen when there isn't any more? We won't be sitting in air-conditioned halls like today. There'll be no trains. There'll be no planes. There'll be no cars. There'll be no heat. We have to find alternatives for all these things. It's a crisis, and it's a hawk just hovering lower, right? This, the hawk of this petrol crisis is just hovering lower and lower and lower and lower, and all of us foolish fish, we're just going on our life very routinely. What to speak of time? It's taking everything away. So it's very important that we don't be complacent in our Krishna consciousness. We have to have a fever of enthusiasm, of determination. We have to understand the urgency. We shouldn't chant our rounds, go to Mangal Arati, go to Srimad Bhagavatam, read Prabhupada's books, or do any service in a routine way. That is the tendency. Because we do it all the time, and we could do it any time. Either we don't do it, or we just, you know, we do it because we're supposed to do it. But we should understand the necessity. Otherwise, we cannot take shelter. Sharanagati is the connection to Krishna. Sharanagati is not just doing your sadhana. Sharanagati is taking shelter of the process of sadhana. So the Lord arranges His coming at a time of the greatest universal crises. Because when we actually have that sense of urgency and call out for the Lord will appear individually and collectively. Ravana was with his brother Kumbhakarna and his son Indrajit. They were conquering the universe. It was horrible. And nobody could stand before him. He had achieved benedictions from Lord Brahma. Meanwhile, the emperor, Dasarath Maharaj, he was facing his own crisis. Dasarath Maharaj, king of the Raghu dynasty in the province of Kosala, was living in his capital of Ayodhya. Everything was going so nice. No king could ask for a better arrangement. Amongst the people of this world, all the other kings were obedient to him. He was in good health, faithful, chaste wives. He had so much wealth. Valmiki's Ramayana describes the palaces of Dasarath Maharaj. There wasn't concrete. Where we use concrete, there was ivory, gold, silver. Where we have electrical lights, he had shining rubies, diamonds, emeralds. Such opulence. And nothing was dirty, everything was clean. Can you imagine that? His entire kingdom, everything spotless. All the buildings were just first-class materials of gold and silver and the finest marbles and ivories. And beautiful lakes and gardens. And everyone was well-dressed. There wasn't need for midday meals. Every- everyone had everything they wanted. Everyone was eating delicious organic foods, succulent foods. There was practically no disease because everyone was living so naturally. You don't read about any hospitals in Dasarath's kingdom. Everyone was healthy. Everyone was wealthy, wearing wonderful clothes. Everyone respected the Brahmins who were completely satisfied, just teaching everyone about how to love God and live a pure life. He had everything and more. What was his anxiety, though? He had no son. Dasarath Maharaj was a great Vaishnav. He was a Raja Rishi. He was not just in anxiety because he was attached to the idea of having a son. Just like sometimes married people, they have no children and they really suffer because they really want a child. But his was different. He was in anxiety, although he had all sense gratification. He had all material facilities. He was totally successful in all of his efforts, and everyone loved him. He was in anxiety because he was not doing his service properly. That was his anxiety in terms of service. It was his service to God, to Vishnu. It was his service to all of his forefathers to have a son who he could train to rule over the world in God consciousness. He was not performing his service to all the people by providing a successor. He was not doing his service to his forefathers or to Vishnu. To be in anxiety about our devotional service is actually a type of ecstasy. Prabhupada would tell us to chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But he would give us services that would put us in a lot of anxiety. So how do you connect the two? Prabhupada considered that that anxiety for devotional service is a higher happiness than Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Because it's an expression of love. It's satisfying to the heart. One devotee, he was a very senior man. Actually, he was a sannyasi. And he was at one time given the responsibility to help build Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan. And too much anxiety. Especially in those days, in the early 70s, because he was a white man. And the steel, you know, they first of all, they try to overcharge you. And then even after overcharging you, they only bring a portion of what you're supposed to be getting. And cement, you have to count every bag. And you have to practically weigh every bag to make sure you're not being cheated, because Prabhupada would not allow Krishna's money to be cheated. So he was just battling against people, battling against corruption. And he'd look down the road and everyone's going, Radhe, Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe, 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 and they're smiling. And he said to Prabhupada, why can't I be like them? I'm in so much anxiety. Prabhupada told him that this anxiety in the service of Krishna is a higher ecstasy than their Radhe Radhes. Because you're serving the Lord. Yashoda Mai was in anxiety all the time. The gopis were in anxiety all the time after Krishna left Vrindavan. Because they wanted to serve him personally. They wanted to please him. They wanted to fulfill his desires. So Dasarath, his anxiety was due to his love for God and his compassion for other living beings. He was not able to do his service right. And this is a tremendous example. A devotee's standard of happiness is not our comforts, our success, our popularity. Our happiness is how we're pleasing Krishna. Atapum ved vijastrestas varana shrami vibhaka shashvanushtatasya dharmasya samsidhir haritoshana. Whatever our varna or ashram, our real success is to the degree we please Krishna. Our happiness should be to the extent we're pleasing Krishna, Guru, and Vaishnavas. Not a selfish thing. That was Maharaj Dasarath. Although he had three wonderful, beautiful wives, year after year, there was no son. He had one daughter, Shanta. But he was so kind that that a king of the Anga province named Romapad Maharaj, he had no children. He was unable to have children. He asked Dasarath Maharaj if he could adopt his only daughter. And Dasarath Maharaj was such a kind, loving friend, such a compassionate being, that he gave his only child to Romapad. But unless he had a son, he could not follow a king must set an example. Srila Prabhupada many times said, today people want to stay in power till they die. But the great kings, they're eager to have a son who they can give it to so they could go to the forest, perform tapasya. That's what they're looking forward to. Leaving all the opulence and the pleasures and the food of the kingdom and go to the forest, wear tree bark, eat roots, and completely absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness. That was his duty. And he considered it was his fault. He didn't blame God. Why aren't you giving me a child? He was, due to my defect, I'm not able to perform my service. So he was 24 hours a day in anxiety. And he's a great devotee. But understand, this type of anxiety attracts Krishna. Because it's anxiety for devotional service. Should I continue?
No.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't want to put you in too much anxiety. So Dasarath Maharaj was expressing to Vasishtha Muni, to his minister Sumantra, also his charioteer, I can find no happiness. My kingdom, my wealth, my fame, my power, my everything, it's all just a hollow shell because I'm not doing my service of having a son. And he tried everything. and nothing worked. This is a good lesson. Whoever you are, even the emperor of the world, you're not the controller. Something's going to get you. What to speak of us little people? Something's going to be there that we just cannot accomplish beyond our control that's going to cause us suffering. It's the nature of the world. Sumantra, his minister, informed Maharaj Dasarath that long ago, Sanat Kumar, he told us, he had spoken, that you will have four sons. Powerful, beautiful, compassionate expansions of the Lord will be your sons. And he explained how it would happen. The great sage, Rishyashringa, would perform a yajna, Ashwamedha yajna, for you. And through that, the child that you long for will be born. But then he had to explain who this Rishyashringa really was. He was the son of a very, very great ascetic. Does anybody know his name? Vibandana, yes. Vibandana. Yes, the sage Vibandana. Now, his brother was also a sage, but his brother got married. And his brother's wife, his sister-in-law, was very, very, she didn't like sages around. So she was very rude and very she harassed Vivekananda. And he just got disgusted with the whole thing and decided that he had a son. Some of the demigods got him to break his great tapasya, and he had a son. And anyways, from what happened there, he had this son, and then the lady who had the son for him left. She was an apsara. And then his brother's wife harassed him. So he was thinking, my son is not going to be influenced by the opposite sex. It's just too much suffering. Hare Krishna. He will be a lifelong brahmachari. But he understood the power of Maya and Kamadev. So he created a hermitage in which no female species of any form could come. It was a very isolated hermitage. It was practically just him and his son. And he was born and raised like that. So Rishyashringa didn't know what a woman was. He never heard the word. It was, that word was banned. What to speak of women being banned? Even the word woman was banned. So he just grew up really happy. And very, very peaceful. He was just, it was the ideal brahmachari ashram. Not like here in Bombay. So, just a beautiful forest. And he's just serving the rishis and serving his father and chanting mantras and meditating on the Lord. And he was so pure. Meanwhile, Romapad, the king of Anga, he made some offenses. And due to these offenses, what a leader does, all the people who are subordinate to that leader have to suffer due to his offenses. So there was a drought for years in his entire kingdom. No rain, no water. People were starving. And even the wild animals, the lions, the tigers, the leopards, they were so hungry that they were coming out of the jungles and eating the people out of desperation. But there was nothing he could do to make it rain. Here again, a great king. But we're not the controllers. So he was told that Rishyashringa is so pure, if he comes to your kingdom, rain will come. So he went and told some of his Brahmins, go bring Rishyashringa here. They said, you know, his father's a very, very intense personality. His whole life he's never left that ashram. If we try to bring him here, he'll curse us and we don't know what will happen. He's very powerful. But we'll make a plan where we can indirectly bring him here. Get the most beautiful, beautiful, beautiful ladies of your court, courtesans they're called, and decorate them very nicely and send them to deal with the situation. So they went and they set up a camp just outside the hermitage of Rishyashringa. And they were singing beautiful songs and making wonderful prasad. And one day, by the will of providence, Rishyashringa happened to just leave his ashram and went outside and came upon them. And he saw them, and he was wondering what kind of... He didn't know anything but rishis. He thought that's all that existed in the world was rishis. So he was thinking, what kind of rishis are these? And they asked, who are you? He said, I am Rishyashringa. And he was used to serving everyone. He was just servant of the servant to the rishis. So he said, why don't you come back to mom? My name is Rishyashringa, and I am the son of Vibhandana. And why don't you come back to my hermitage so I could serve you nicely? So they said, yes, we will come. So they came back. And he washed their hands, he washed their feet, he gave them nice herbs that he had collected, and roots and fruits. And they were so happy. And they said, now that you have served us so nicely, why don't you come to our hermitage so we can serve you? He said, well, my father, you know. And they were very afraid of his father. Somehow or other, his father was not there that day. But they were really afraid that he may come home. So they left. But they stayed. Just close by. And Rishyashringa was thinking, those sages were really nice. Said, I really want to get their association. They really did something to my heart. So as soon as his father wasn't there, he went back. And they said, let us reciprocate and give you our hospitality. Now, he never ate anything in his whole life except wild fruits and roots. So they said, here's a fruit, very special fruit. But it was a sweetmeat. He never tasted a sweet in his life. And please understand, this is Treta Yuga Sweets. And they didn't put just love and devotion into that sweet. They put all kinds of other energies into that sweet when they cooked it. And Rishi Sringa ate that sweet, and he never tasted anything like this. And they were just really giving him, speaking really nice words and singing songs to him and welcoming him. They would embrace him. And Rishi Sringa was just really, really having a satsang like never before. So they said, we want to serve you more. Why don't you come to our real hermitage? And he couldn't say no to them. So he said, sure, I'll come. You know, just take me wherever you want to take me, oh great sages. Still didn't understand what was happening. So they put him on a boat. Beautiful boat. Wonderful boat. All decorated. And they were singing songs for him, and they were taking the boat to the kingdom of Anga. And just when he was arriving, Romapad, the king, was awaiting with a whole welcoming ceremony. And just as he was coming, clouds formed in the sky and abundant rains showered on the kingdom. That was the power of Rishi Sringa. When it was raining, everyone knew it was only because of him. When he entered into the kingdom, there were conch shells and chamaras and decorations and bands playing. Everybody was so happy just welcoming the great sage. And I guess living in the kingdom, Rishi Sringa realized what a woman was. And by Romapad Maharaj's arrangement, he married the daughter of Dasarath, Shanta. So Sumantra said, if you just go to Maharaj Romapad and tell him that you need your daughter and son-in-law to come for some time to Ayodhya, then he could perform the yajna for your child. I have heard this from Vasishtha Muni. So Dasarath Maharaj, with his wives, boarded their royal chariots, went on the journey to Anga, and requested this of Romapad Maharaj. As a loving friend, he gladly agreed. And Dasarath Maharaj also had a grand welcoming ceremony for the sage Rishi Sringa when he arrived in Ayodhya. And everyone was so hopeful. Because you see, when the king suffers, everyone suffers. Because of love. Because the king loved everyone so much, they loved the king so much. When the king, paradukaduki. When the king saw any suffering in anyone, he would give his life for that person to alleviate that suffering. And because he was like that, the whole kingdom was suffering because Dasarath Maharaj did not have a child. So there was a great celebration when Rishi Sringa came, along with Shanta. After some time, Dasarath Maharaj asked him to perform this Aswamedha Yajna. And Rishi Sringa explained the procedures. He said, you should set up the yajna on the northern side of the Sarayu River. And then you have to get an absolutely perfect, pure horse. And then you have to send that horse
to travel through all parts of the world with armies of your generals following behind. And wherever that horse goes, the kings and the rulers of that place all have to submit themselves to be your servants and have to agree in a favorable, loving mood to come to the Aswamedha Yajna to support you. And if anyone doesn't agree, then there has to be a battle of your generals to defeat that person and subjugate them. Only when you have a totally unrivaled kingdom can you perform the yajna. So for 1 year, that horse was going here, there, and everywhere, followed by the generals. And everyone, they loved Dasarath Maharaj. Even the great kings, even the great rulers, they all agreed. When the horse returned, Rishi Sringa explained to Dasarath Maharaj, you have to treat all your guests with such love and devotion that their hearts are filled with joy. That means you have to build wonderful, opulent guest house for all the kings, all the great warriors, all the rulers, all the Brahmins from throughout the world who come here. This is a major festival. And you have to build storehouses of grains and have milk, and you have to have spices to feed luxuriously everyone who comes. And you have to build massive stables, because there's going to be tens and thousands of people coming with their chariots, with their horses, with their elephants. You have to feed them and make them completely satisfied. So Dasarath Maharaj took so much of the wealth of his treasury to just build guest houses and stables and massive kitchens and storage areas. And he said, and everybody that comes, you have to serve them with such humility and devotion. Even if for some reason you become angry or frustrated, they should never know. You must treat them with such respect and make them so happy. And everything you give them and every way you serve them has to be done with sincere love. Can you imagine serving all these kinds of people with sincere love? It has to come from your heart. Otherwise, the yajna will be a failure. If he had the wrong thoughts in his mind while he was serving these people, the yajna would be a failure. And then you have to get all these great Brahmins, days of mantras and recital of incantations, yantra, mantra, tantra, puja, mudra. If there's one mistake, it's a failure. And if it's a failure, it's a great offense to the Lord and the demigods. And you and all the Brahmins who make that mistake have to suffer terribly. If there's one word out of these hundreds and thousands of mantras and prayers that they're going to be chanting over a period of a long time, if there's one syllable that's pronounced wrong by any one of them, then everyone has to suffer. And as we said, if there's one bad feeling in your heart toward anyone, it's a failure. And you have to suffer. This is what it was performing a yajna in Treta Yuga.
but by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna. Kalera dosani de rajanasti hekumahan guna kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sangha parambraje.
Nobody's qualified to do proper deity worship. What to speak of yajna? What to speak of sitting for 60,000 years in meditation with no material desire coming into your heart? That's what it took to develop love of God in previous ages. But the same result of doing that Aswamedha Yajna of Dasaran, of bringing Krishna to incarnate within our hearts, it's possible simply by sincerely chanting the holy name. Therefore, Bhagavad Purana tells that those who have sumedasa, who have good intelligence, they will worship the Supreme Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appears with a golden form along with his associates by chanting the holy names. So they perform this Aswamedha Yajna perfectly, under the direction of Rishi Sringa. And Kashyapa Muni, Vishwamitra Muni, all these great sages were there to assist. They came from everywhere. It was a perfect yajna. At a certain point, the devatas come down to accept their shares of the yajna. Brahma, Indra, and the other demigods were there. They actually appeared to accept the offerings that were being made to them. At that time, on behalf of all the demigods, Indra expressed to Lord Brahma that since he's going to have a son, please arrange that Vishnu be his son for the purpose of killing Ravana. And they went on and on and on to explain all the horrible deeds of Ravana, what havoc he was causing, not only on earth, but in the universe. And they said nothing and no one could stop him. All of our demigod armies cannot defeat him. Why? Because, Lord Brahma, you gave him these benedictions. Your benedictions are infallible. Ravana performed severe tapasya along with Kumbhakarna, Vibhishan, and Suparnaka. Amazing family. Son of Vishada, great Brahman. He performed such tapasya. Severe. For so many thousands and thousands of years that Lord Brahma had to come. He was obliged. What do you want? He gave Ravana supernatural powers. And he also gave him a benediction. Ravana said, I don't want to ever be defeated. I don't ever want to be killed by any demigod, by any yaksha, by any Gandharva. And he just went on and on and on and on. And Brahma gave him all those benedictions. The only thing he didn't say, the only category he didn't ask a benediction for, was humans. Because although we humans think we're so great, as far as Ravana was concerned, humans are like, it's like going to, it's like praying to God, please don't let an ant kill me. Humans were like ants to Ravana. They were insignificant. He considered it would be a humiliating experience to even ask for the benediction, not to be killed by a human, because they were just so inconsequential. The loophole. So Brahma devised a plan. When Lord Vishnu came to receive his share of the yajna, Brahma explained what Ravana was doing in great detail. He said, I gave him every benediction except that he could not be killed by a human. So if you personally incarnate in the role of a human being, then you could kill Ravana. All the demigods were praying. And Vishnu agreed. On his bird carrier Garuda, with his four arms, with conch shell, club, lotus flower, and chakra, he accepted that I will expand myself into four forms and be the four sons of Dasarath. And I personally, in the role of a human being, will not only kill Ravana, but I will exterminate his children, his grandchildren, and his entire dynasty. The demigods, very happy. Meanwhile, down on the earth where the yajna was being performed, they didn't know anything about this whole conversation going on right above them. So then they offered the horse to the fire. And because everything was so perfect, right before everyone's eyes, the horse was consumed by the fire, and then a perfect, effulgent, celestial body of that horse emerged from the fire and ascended to the heavens. That was what was required for the yajna to be successful. Everyone was cheering, Jai, Jai, the Ashwamedha Yajna of Dasarath Maharaj. First he had to conquer the world. Then he had to bring all the rulers to participate. Then he had to have Brahmins who chanted all the mantras perfectly. And then he had to give new life to this horse. Then the time came, Rishi Sringa said, this is the final ritual of the yajna. And Rishi Sringa made an offering into the fire. Before everyone's eyes, from the fire emerged a divine personality. Lord Vishnu personally sent him as his representative. This person had a darkish complexion with golden hairs, and he was just, his voice was like the rumbling of a kettle drums of the heavenly planets. He had effulgence and beauty that captivated everyone. Within his hands, he was holding a pot of pure gold filled with divine payasam nectar. Dasarath Maharaj offered his obeisances to this inconceivable personality. And he addressed himself. I am the representative of Lord Vishnu who has been sent to facilitate you having four sons. Take this pot of nectar and take your pure-hearted queens and give them portions of this nectar and they will have sons. After saying this, Dasarath Maharaj offered his obeisances again and circumambulated that personality several times, worshipped him, and then the representative of Vishnu merged back into the fire. Dasarath Maharaj went back to his palace and offered the payasam to Kausalya, Kaikeyi, and gave two portions to Sumitra. Yes? Sumitra. And very soon, after drinking this divine nectar, the three ladies, queens, felt powerful personalities appearing within their wombs. Their bodies emitted light. Their beauty increased by hundreds of times because the Lord was living within their hearts. 6 seasons or 12 months passed in their pregnancy when on this day, the 9th day of the moon, Ram Navami, Kausalya gave birth to Sri Ramchandra. He appeared in this world not only to annihilate Ravana, not only to reestablish the principles of religion and give pleasure to his devotees, but to perform such wonderful pastimes that will awaken ecstatic love of God in the hearts of anyone who sincerely hears them under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. Sri Ram appeared as the son of Dasarath and Kausalya. Next, Bharat appeared as the son of Kaikeyi. And Lakshman and Shatrughna appeared like twins as the sons of Sumitra. Dasarath Maharaj was overwhelmed with ecstatic joy. The queens were bubbling over with bliss, and the entire kingdom of Ayodhya shared that joy. When everyone heard of Ram's birth, who was going to be the next king, the fulfillment of so many years of longing and praying of everyone, there was glorious celebrations in all directions. People were dancing, people were singing, people were giving in charity. Dasarath Maharaj was just giving massive charity to the Brahmins, to the rishis. He was giving so much charity to those who were in need. Nobody was in need. He was just giving charity, charity, charity. Hundreds and thousands, millions of cows and mountains of gold and rubies and diamonds and mountains of silver. Would you have liked to have been there in those days? The Brahmins didn't want any of it. He was giving mountains of gold and silver and jewels to the Brahmins. And they didn't want it. They just wanted to serve. If they wanted it, they weren't qualified to receive it. They accepted it only because they knew that it was for the benefit of the king to give it. After the yajna, if the king doesn't give great in charity, then the yajna is defected. They don't want any of this stuff. What do they need gold for? They live in a grass hut. What are they going to do with gold in a grass hut? They're not going to buy a flat on Marine Drive. They're happy in their grass hut. They're happy. So they would take the gold just for the benefit of the king. And then they themselves would distribute it for the purpose of utilizing it to spread Krishna consciousness. That's all. The Brahmins would use everything just to help spread Ram consciousness. Nothing for themselves. So yes, this great festival was going on. Festival of charity, festival of feasting, dancing, chanting, feasting. And by the causeless mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, today we are allowed to participate in that festival. The festival of the appearance of Ramchandra. These pastimes are not limited to time or geographical conditions. There's no limitation. Srila Prabhupada told us, wherever devotees are sincerely chanting and serving the Lord together, that place is Vrindavan. You can make your home Vrindavan. You can make your heart Vrindavan. And Krishna's appearance is not just historically, it did happen 5,000 years ago. But all of His pastimes are nitya lila. They're eternal. They're happening all the time. And because He's non-different than the sound vibration coming from the holy scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. The sound vibration of the Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different. When you hear about Krishna being born, if you hear with receptivity, that lila is actually taking place right now. It's not something long ago. Yes, then, but it's happening now. When we read about Krishna stealing the clothes of the gopis, if we have faith in our heart and hear it, we are part of the pastime right now. It's taking place right in our hearts. That is a fact. That is the absolute nature of the Lord. So right now, here, this is not Bombay. This is Radharas Bihari Temple. This is Vrindavan Dham, if we are in the spirit of selfless service to Radharas Bihari. On this day of Ram Navami, if we're absorbed in speaking these pastimes and hearing these pastimes with a faithful heart and an enthusiastic service attitude, factually, at this moment, we are in Ayodhya. At this moment, Lord Sri Ramchandra is appearing within this world. And at this moment, today, we have the chance to celebrate this grand festival of the appearance of the Supreme Lord Ram as the son of Dasaratha and Kaushalya, along with all the other residents of Ayodhya. That is Srila Prabhupada's mercy upon us. He has given us entrance into the eternal pastimes of the Lord. And Prabhupada would say sometimes, you're already there. You're already there. It's just a matter of realizing it through purifying our heart. So we should understand that these festivals are very important. His Holiness Srila Lokanath Swami Maharaj, who is patiently tolerating my
childlike words of speaking today. He wrote a beautiful book on festivals. Yes. Festivals are a very, very prominent part of our parampara. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami tells the importance of, it's one of the limbs of pure devotional service, to properly celebrate festivals. And Prabhupada showed us by his own example. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us. When the Lord was in Puri, he and all of his devotees celebrated all the festivals. It's described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita how he celebrated Ram Navami. He had his devotees, some of them, dress up as monkey soldiers. And they were building the bridges across, and they were, and one was playing Hanuman, "I will destroy you, Ravana." And they were just doing spontaneous dramas of Ram Leela and feasting. And of course, the prime focus of every festival for the Lord and his devotees was the congregational chanting of the holy name. Srila Prabhupada one year when we were for Janamastami. And everyone was fasting. And all Prabhupada was, he gave Bhagavatam class, and then he spoke in the evening, and he had Krishna book read up until midnight and beyond. And there was just chanting and dancing and Hari Katha all day. And Prabhupada was inspiring it all. There's beautiful lecture tapes of Prabhupada on Narasingha Chaturdasi, Varaha Dwadasi. There's several beautiful tapes of Prabhupada on Ram Navami, where he's describing the importance of Ram, the purpose of Ram's incarnation. In one lecture, he's explaining the beautiful pastimes of Lord Ram in wonderful detail. And in this one lecture, Prabhupada said, of all the expansions of Krishna, Ram is the most important. He is prominent. Rama and Narasingha are the two most prominent because they are exhibiting the greatest of the opulences of the Lord, of Krishna, who is the reservoir of all opulences. And also the deepest loving relationships with devotees of all expansions of Krishna. So how to celebrate these festivals is very important, because when we celebrate these festivals, to the degree we are absorbed, we are literally, actually entering into these eternal pastimes. And our love for Krishna awakens. Is there any time I'm supposed to end this class? Require a more neutral perspective than Krishnananda Prabhu. Lord
Lord Sri Ramchandra. As a child, his charms attracted everyone's hearts. The entire kingdom of Ayodhya, they ate, they drank, they slept, they breathed only for the pleasure of this little baby Ram. That is how he captured their hearts. That is the power of the Lord.
And in every way, he was the perfect example.
Bhakti means loving relationships. If our relationships are not right, then our love for God will not grow properly. In the spiritual world, if you don't like relationships, then you'll be happier with Sayujya Mukti, with merging into the impersonal Brahman. Because there's no relationships. You're just by yourself, just peaceful like anything. But in all the Vaikuntha planets, the abode of Ram, Narasingha, and Goloka, the abode of Krishna, it's all loving relationships. Lord Ramchandra taught both on the transcendental level as well as on the level of this world. By his own example, how to have perfect relationships. We'll begin with his relationships with his mother and father. Now, in all these examples, we find sacrifice. Love means to sacrifice of yourself for the welfare and the happiness of others. That is love. No selfishness. Ramchandra, every morning, touched the feet of his father. But not like a ritual like some people do in India. He did it with his heart and soul. Which means he did whatever his father said. When you touch someone's feet, that doesn't mean anything in itself. It's the feeling. Prabhupada writes, Krishna doesn't see the thing you do. He sees the purpose in which it's done. Touching someone's feet means, I am your servant. Tell me what to do. I will do it. How many of you are willing to touch each other's feet now? Serious. Ramchandra, whatever his father asked him, and he would know what his father wanted before he even asked him. Such satisfaction he gave to Dasarath Maharaj and his mother, Kausalya. And later on, we know the story of when Kaikeyi was a great lesson. She was a wonderful lady. She loved Ram as much as she loved her own son, Bharat. But somehow or other, the Lord wanted to fulfill his purpose and teach us many lessons in the process. One is the power of association. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Koi, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoy. A moment's association with a sadhu can completely transform one's life. But if you're a sadhu, association with a materialistic, worldly person can completely corrupt your life. This kinchanasya bhagavad bhajano mokasya param param jigamasura babasagarasya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said about himself, when the devotees were asking him to meet with King Prataparudra, he said, for one who is in the desiring to cross over the ocean of birth and death, to associate with materialistic people or people too much addicted to sense gratification and sex life is worse than drinking poison willingly. That's the Lord speaking. And he set the example by his own life to show us. Even great personalities, if they come under the influence of the wrong association, everything can become polluted. It's very important. That's why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu glorified Nityananda Prabhu so strongly, because he was sending Nityananda Prabhu to all kinds of bad places. There was horrible association. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took Nityananda's kopan and ripped it into shreds and had all the devotees wrap it around their heads. And he wrapped a shred of Lord Nityananda's kopan around his own head. And he washed Nityananda's feet when Nityananda was in a trance and ecstatic love. And Lord Chaitanya drank the water and sprinkled that on his head. Then he served it out for all the other devotees to drink and sprinkle it on their head. And he said, Nityananda Prabhu, he is so great. Even if I see him in a prostitution house, in a place of drinking, gambling, and illicit sex, even if I see him embracing a low-class woman, I will worship his feet and honor him, knowing that he is only doing it in the service of the Lord. What a glorification that was of the Lord. Because factually, for the rest of us, we are completely dependent on our association, and we have to be very careful about our association. And here is a graphic example. Kaikeyi. Dasarath Maharaj is a first-class Vaishnava, a great king, a noble man. He had three queens, and he chose the most virtuous, the most pure-hearted, the most loving and devoted women in the world to marry in the royal order. Kaikeyi was a great soul. She was such a selfless servant that when Dasarath Maharaj was fighting a battle, she was right there, like serving as his charioteer. And when he was wounded, she did everything, risking her life to save his life. And she did. Took him from the battlefield, nursed him. Not many wives would do that. Well, maybe in this room, all the wives would do that. But she showed, what is a wife? Dasarath Maharaj was so pleased with her. He offered her two blessings. Whatever you ask, I promise you, from my heart, I will fulfill your desires. You only say that to someone you have complete trust in. Right? Would you just say that to anybody? Anything you want that I have, I will give you. I vow. That's what kind of a woman Kaikeyi was. That Dasarath Maharaj had such total faith and trust in her love for him, in her sacrifice to him, and in her good nature. And when Ram was born and Bharat were born, Kausalya loved Bharat like she loved Ram. And Kaikeyi loved Ram as she loved Bharat. She was a great devotee. And for years and years and years, she was a second mother to Ramchandra. She loved him dearly. When Dasarath decided to coronate Ram as the prince regent, to make it official that he would be the next king in the near future in training. Prince regent means very soon he's going to be the king. When the news came to Kaikeyi, she was dancing in ecstasy from her heart. She was so happy. This is the fulfillment of my beloved husband, Dasarath Maharaj's dream to put Ram on the throne. And how all the citizens of Ayodhya will be completely in joy to hear about this. And how qualified Ram is. There is no one in all of creation more qualified. She was totally blissful. For Ram, for Dasarath, and for everyone. And seeing her ecstasy, Mantara, that hunchbacked maidservant, she sizzled with envy. Hare Krishna. The devatas, they understood that as long as Ram with Sita and Bharat and Lakshman and Shatrughna are living in this very wonderful city of Ayodhya and everything's happy and he becomes the king, when's he ever going to go out and kill Ravana? That's what he came here for, at least that was from their perspective. So they created this conspiracy. But it's amazing. Politics amongst devotees is very strange. They created this whole havoc, but their motivation was ultimately for everyone's good. Their motivation was to help the Lord fulfill his mission. So they infected Mantara with envy. Why are we in this material world? Due to envy. Why do we remain in this material world? Envy. If we are envious of God, he is the supreme enjoyer. If I want to be the enjoyer, that's envy. He's the supreme proprietor. If I want to be proprietor, that's envy. And if you are envious of God, who's the complete whole, then you are potentially envious of every part and parcel. Because everyone's a little part of a spark of Krishna. So this potential of envy toward anyone, even your loved ones, is there.
if you're not very seriously Krishna conscious. And we see, even in spiritual movements all over the world, throughout history, if you study, one of the greatest problems has always been participants of the same religion, doing the same work for the same guru or the same avatar. They become envious of each other. And it creates havoc. The greatest obstruction is when there's envy amongst devotees. We must guard very strongly against it. You cannot understand Krishna when you are envious of anyone. Krishna tells Arjuna, you can understand this message of Bhagavad Gita because you have no envy. Mantara, her heart filled with envy. And there's nothing worse than associating with an envious person. Because envious people will blaspheme. And when we speak blaspheme, or when we hear blasphemy, what does that do to our bhakti? It's called offense hearing or speaking offenses against the Vaishnava is mad elephant. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you're all trying to grow your bhakti. It's like a garden. This creeper, bhakti lata bija, is growing. It's not very strong until you're very advanced. But this mad elephant, this blasphemy born of envy, if you will let it into your heart, it can trample, uproot that little creeper of devotion. And what happens? Then you become envious. If you associate with envious people who take pleasure in criticizing others, you will be the same way. Not maybe. You will. Internally, and it will all come out in due course of time. So the worst thing is when devotees criticize each other, blaspheme each other. And rarely will anyone ever say that I'm envious of him or her. They will all say, I'm simply speaking the facts. Hare Krishna. Somebody says, this devotee is just nonsense, this and that and this and this. Did you hear what he did 37 years ago? And did you hear what she did yesterday? And somebody says, why are you saying this? Because I'm trying to protect you. It's a fact. Will they ever say, I'm saying it because I'm burning with envy for that person? They'll never say that. No blasphemer will ever say, I'm envious. Yes? When Gopal Chapala tried to destroy Srivas Thakur's reputation, he went to the town and said, see what Srivas is doing. He's a rascal. Worshipping Durga Devi with all these tantric black rites with meat and wine, and they're doing orgies at night. Somebody says, why are you saying this? No, none of the blasphemers of Navadvip would say, because we're envious. They were saying, because it is our duty to protect everyone by exposing their rascaldom. Yes? And probably in their own hearts, they don't even believe they're envious. But they're envious. And any criticism born of envy toward God or a devotee is blasphemy. If you have good intentions towards someone and you're really trying to help them without envy in your heart and you criticize, that's not really criticism. That's not blasphemy.
Real blasphemy is when it is motivated by envy. That will have a horrible mad elephant effect, not only in you, but those people around you. Very serious. It's life or death spiritually. This gossip, this prajalpa. I remember one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. He was mixing with ISKCON devotees. And he warned, this is after Prabhupada left, he warned the devotees, he said, the problem with you people is you don't have enough fear of Vaishnava Parad. He said, I'm worried about all you people because you do not have proper fear of Vaishnava Parad. Sometimes it comes to the point where it shows your status that you could just speak just very loosely about even senior devotees. It shows that I'm a very, very exalted person. But it's very dangerous. Whether you believe it or not, it will destroy your bhakti. So here's an example. Here is a great lover of Ram. And she's associating intimately with an envious person. And Mantara, in her envy, she didn't say to Kaikeyi, I'm envious. She said, no, I'm not envious. I love you, and I'm trying to serve you by revealing the truth, the holy truth. Why do you think, and when your person's envious, they can just take circumstances and make it so convincing but out of context? Yes? Because an envious mind could be very clever to really make things sound, it's true. Why do you think that your husband Dasarath sent Bharat and Shatrughna to your father's house, the king Kekaya, long distance away? And why, now that he's gone, he wants to coronate Ram? Isn't it obvious to you? Dasarath favors Kausalya over you. Don't you see that? He favors Ram over Bharat. But you know that Bharat is so qualified. When Ram becomes king, he's going to know Bharat's great qualifications, and he's not going to want a competitor. He's going to banish Bharat and you to the forest forever. Don't you see that? Kaikeyi couldn't believe what she was hearing. What nonsense are you talking? Ram is the most pure-hearted, compassionate, loving person in Brahma's creation. How can you say this about him? But then Mantara just started presenting facts out of context again and again to convince her. And the energy of the envy in her heart was so powerful that little by little it caused Kaikeyi to doubt. That's the beginning. An envious person blasphemes, and gradually doubt appears in our heart. And then once there's that doubt, then all these facts and all these figures to justify exactly what Kaikei was trying to prove started to make sense. Until the point where Kaikei completely accepted Mantara and was praising her. What would I do without a maidservant like you? You are so gracious. You are so merciful. You are saving my life. You love me more than anyone. And Kaikei burned with the same envy as Mantara toward Ram and Dasarat.
Srila Prabhupada gives an example. If you put an iron rod in fire, what happens?
It becomes red and hot like fire. That is the law of nature. What you associate with, you become. The loving sentiments of Kaikei turned into blazing hot fire of envy due to opening her heart to associate with Kaikei, with Mantara.
It's like the soul who is Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Satya Kabunoi. The soul by nature loves God. Where does this envy come from?
By associating, by our free choice, and then by being in this world, that little envy that begins as a spark just turns into a blazing fire by feeding it with association of other envious people.
So now, Kaikei is considering Mantara like her guru. She's already convinced her, the Sambandha. She's already convinced her about her constitutional position as the enemy of Ram. So now, what should I do? Give me Avideya.
Process? Don't you remember, Kaikei, those two boons? Ask. Ram, exiled to the forest for 14 years, Bharat coronated as king. And the Prayojana? Is you're the mother of the queen. Hare Krishna. She didn't use those words, but it's a very perverted reflection of the principle. First she convinced her of the theory, of the principle, and then told how to realize, how to practice to achieve the goal.
Kaikei was convinced. That lady who was willing to give her life, her everything, to give pleasure to her husband, was now so envious that she was willing to cause him to suffer and die to fulfill her own envious ambitions. Dasarat loved her, came to her room. He expected her to be as happy as Kausalya. He knew she would be. But she was laying in her sulking chambers. What are you doing here? With her jewels strewn around, very simple clothing, laying on the floor. It's a beautiful story that breaks the heart. Dasarat felt so much compassion and pity for her, and it was all her strategy due to envy, just to set him up. Like a spider
makes a very, very beautiful soft web to catch the fly and then devour it. Sorry about that. So she created this whole web to get the pity of her husband. She's sulking. And she knew he could not bear seeing her unhappy. What's wrong? Please tell me. I'll do anything for you. I'll do anything for you. Tell me how I can make you happy. I hate to see you in this condition. It's such an auspicious time. You'll do anything for me? Of course. Do you remember those two boons? Yes, of course. Will you grant those boons for me? Yes, anything. Just get up, put on nice clothes, and be happy. I'll give you anything. Then coronate my son, Bharat, as king, and banish into exile in the forest, Ram, for 14 years. Dasarath could not believe. This is coming from the wife he loved and trusted wholeheartedly. This is coming from the loving devotee of Ram. His head was reeling. What did you say? And she became cruel as a venomous serpent and more. She saw her husband fall to the ground, heart absolutely broken, weeping tears, pleading and begging helplessly with Kaikeyi to reconsider her diabolical, demoniac plan. And Kaikeyi had no sympathy at all. She just stood over him. What kind of coward are you? What kind of liar are you? What type of king makes a promise and then tries to get out of fulfilling that promise? You're not a man. You're just a weak nothing. Look at you laying on the floor, struggling to take back your word of honor, a disgrace to your entire dynasty. Dasarath Maharaj was pummeled, pounded, crushed. By the harshness of her words. Ultimately, he just laid there crying. And it's the morning of the coronation. And everyone in Ayodhya, it's the happiest day. Since the day Ram was born, this was the happiest day for everyone's lives. It was all, everybody was just running around in beautiful clothes. This whole city was decorated. The Brahmins were all prepared to perform the auspicious rites. And Ramchandra, he was looking for his father to get his permission and blessings. He couldn't find his father. He found out that his father went toward the palace of Kaikeyi. Instead of being in the central room or in the inner chambers, couldn't find him anywhere. What's he doing in the sulking chamber on this day? Ram knew Kaikeyi's love for him. And when he went in there, he saw his father just practically unconscious, almost dead in grief. Just moaning. And Ram asked him, "My father, what's happening? I'll do anything for you. Why are you in this condition?" Dasarath could only moan in pain. He could not tell Ramchandra what had just happened. And while he's laying there, suffering, miserably, Kaikeyi's
she's just as haughty and as arrogant as a person could be, with no trace of feeling in her heart. She announced to Ram that your father has just vowed to banish you to the forest for 14 years and make my son Bharat king. And you should not try to talk him out of it, because if you do, you will cause an eternal stain of infamy to your entire dynasty. And you will destroy your father's life by breaking his word, causing him to break his word. Hare Krishna. Now, we don't take this bad association and hearing criticism very seriously. But it's serious. We're nothing compared to Kaikeyi. It's like a disease. You put a little hepatitis, you put a molecular particle of hepatitis C or AIDS in your bloodstream, and what happens? It may cause you to suffer and die. But a molecule, what is that? It won't hurt me. For in the medical profession, we have to take seriously these diseases to protect them, ourselves from them. And for Vaishnavas, we have to take very seriously this disease of envy and how what blasphemy does to put that germ of envy and accelerate it within our hearts. So, when Ramchandra heard this, he accepted. No argument. My dear father, if this is what I have to do to protect your honor, I will be grateful to do so. On this very day, I will go to the forest. What kind of son is Ram? To protect the word and the honor of his father, he was willing to give up his kingdom, to give up the throne of the kingdom of the world, and to live wearing tree bark, matted hair, in the darkest regions of the forest for 14 years. That is an ideal son. That is the love. That is love. Now, when the citizens of Ayodhya and all the armies and even the sages headed by Vasishtha, when it came to their attention, they were totally against it. Everyone would have supported Ram to be the king. Everyone, except Kaikeyi and Mantara. And nobody cared about them. It's not that Ram was forced into the forest. All he had to do was say, no, I'm going to stay. I'm going to be the king. This is not right. And he would have had the support of everyone, including his own father. But by his own will, to show his love for his father by showing the ideal of a son with love, he left. And how much he was so strict about following that vow. I was listening to a tape of Srila Prabhupada where he explains when Ravana kidnapped Sita in that most cowardly way. Lord Ram, when he found out what had happened, that it was Ravana who stole Sita, and he understood everything about Ravana's army, Prabhupada said, Ram could have gone back to Ayodhya and just say, you know, Sita has been stolen, bring on the armies, let's go fight this war. That's what anyone would have done. Why didn't Ram do it? Because of his, Prabhupada said, because he wanted to protect his father's honor. For 14 years, he was not allowed to come out of the forest. So he couldn't go to Ayodhya to get the armies. So what did he do? He got an army of monkeys from the forest. And he, oh. That was the extreme in which he was honorable to his father. And Ram liberated Bali to make Sugriva king. They're living in Kishkindha Kshetra, which is a forest. But still, even in Kishkindha Kshetra, you know, even in the forest, there was some sort of place of residence for the monkey chiefs and everyone. When it came to coronating Sugriva as king, Ram wouldn't even go into the place of the forest where there was the population for the coronation. The whole 14 years, he never entered a village. He would meet sages who were living in the forest, but he never even went to a village or any place where there was any amount of people, because it was his vow to be in the deep forest 14 years. That's what kind of son Ram was to such a noble father as Dasarath. And Kaikeyi was like a mother. We know the story when Bharat, he was really, when he found out what had happened, it's a long story, he was outraged. Ram was his life and soul. He and Shatrughna, they were horrified. Kaikeyi really was convinced that her son would be happy and proud of her for doing this. That's how much she was covered over. And Shatrughna, when he found out about it, he grabbed, and Shatrughna is a powerful Kshatriya. You know, later on, we find out he went to Mathura and he killed Labanasura and these big, big, powerful demons, these demons that they would just go out and kill elephants and tigers and lions just as a daily pastime and eat them. Yes, can you imagine just eating tigers and lions and elephants? He was a major demon, and Shatrughna fought him and fought. He's a powerful man. And Shatrughna was so angry. Bharat was so infuriated. Shatrughna grabbed Mantara by the hair and smashed her to the ground. Meanwhile, Mantra was dressed like a queen herself. Because Kaikeyi was so happy with her, so grateful to her for saving her son,
that she was awarding Kaikeyi the most precious gold necklaces and beautiful jewels and earrings and bangles and the finest silks. And here's this hunchback woman who was dressed like a deity. Such opulence from the best treasures of Kaikeyi's ornaments. She was giving them to Kaikeyi out of gratitude. And Satrughna just sees this Mantara who's smiling just so proudly that look at what we have done. And he just grabbed her and threw her to the ground. And all of her ornaments just broke in pieces and fell to the floor. And then he started picking her up and throwing her and kicking her with his foot and kicking her humped back. She was screaming and screaming, "Ah, Kaikeyi, save me!" Ah, she was screaming, shrieking like a demon. She was, and Kaikeyi was screaming, "Pirates, don't let him do this!" Satrughna was gonna kill her, but Bharat stopped him. But Satrughna was as loyal, faithful, and as obedient to Bharat as Lakshman was to Ramchandra. Bharat said, "No, you cannot kill her. She's a woman. If she wasn't, I would kill her myself." Hare Krishna. When Bharat went to the forest, Chitrakoot, at the Kamagiri, where Ram, Lakshman, and Sita were residing by the inspiration of Bharadraj Muni, Bharat came with the armies. Of course, we know Dasarath had already died of separation. Still, Kaikeyi's heart was not changed for some time. Bharat went to plead with Ram to return. "I will take your 14 years of exile. You go back and rule the kingdom. Our father is dead. How could I be the king? You are the eldest brother. You are the one our father wanted to sit on the throne. I've always been your servant. Everyone in Ayodhya wants you to be the king. No one wants me. How can a crow try to fly like Garuda? How could a jackal try to take the role of a lion? How could I sit on the throne that is exclusively meant for you?" Here is Vasishtha Muni, our noble guru, and all the Brahmins and sages. And here is your mother, Kaushalya. And here is the whole armies and the words of all the citizens of Ayodhya. Everyone wants you to come back. Please return to Ayodhya. Such love. The amazing thing is when Ram saw Bharat, he was wearing deerskin and he had matted hair. Because when he heard from Maharaj Guha that that's what Ram did, he did it. He could not accept a position of comfort more than Ram because he felt totally responsible for that banishment. Because his cruel-hearted mother all did it all for him. Bharat was pleading with Ram, "I had nothing to do with this. But it's all my fault." And he started blaspheming his mother, Kaikeyi. And please listen carefully.
Ramchandra stopped Bharat.
He said, never ever speak about your mother like that. He said, you must go home, you must be the king, and you must forgive your mother. And you must give her comfort and love and take care of her for the rest of her life. He considered Kaikeyi a mother himself, Lord Ramchandra. Even though she did all that to him, he had no malice. He had no negative thoughts toward her. That's what kind of son Ramchandra was. He would not hear a single negative word against Kaikeyi. As far as husband, another relationship. Well, while we're on the subject of brothers, we'll talk about brotherly love first. This is very powerful. We're speaking about the different relations that Ram was so exemplary in. Here is Bharat pleading, crying, begging for Ramchandra to go back and be the king. And Bharat Maharaj, who did absolutely nothing wrong himself, he was faultless, he was pure in every respect, he was being completely misunderstood by everyone. Vasishtha Muni, Bhardwaj Muni, Maharaj Guha, all these people he were meeting, and even the people of Ayodhya, they were thinking that Bharat was part of the conspiracy with his mother to banish Ram. He was devastated. He was hurt worse than anybody. And he's begging the Lord from the heart of hearts. And Ramchandra is telling him, no, it's not possible. We must protect our father's honor. You go back and you be king. This is my desire. Now, Bharat could have said, well, all right. Now that I have your blessings, I'll go. Not like that. They already brought all the coronation ingredients to coronate him right there in Chitrakoot and then bring him back. They had the pot with all the sacred waters from all the holy places, like something like what Lokanath Maharaj did for that Abhishekam of Prabhupada. They had waters from all holy places, and they were all sanctified by the great rishis, and Vasishtha Muni had it to coronate Ram right there in Chitrakoot to make him the king and bring him back. And it was all under Bharat's supervision. For those of you who have been to Chitrakoot, there is a place called Bharat Kufa, where when Lord Ram rejected the proposal to go back, no matter how much Bharat pleaded with him. So they put that water in that well where all the holy places are. It's still there today. You can bathe in it and do achman. Have you ever seen such brotherly love as this? Today, it happens all over the world. A father leaves a fortune. Yes? The brothers start fighting over who's the controller, who's the proprietor of the fortune. And they become enemies. Sometimes even fighting in courtrooms. Yes? Nothing hurts the father more than seeing the children fighting.
The father makes all this wealth for the purpose of giving happiness to his children, and ultimately, it makes them enemies. What is the use? So sad. So here's the greatest fortune in all the world. The throne of the kingdom. And what is the fight going on at Kamagiri in Chitrakoot between Ram and Bharat? They're battling emotionally.
Very well, from
Bharat is pleading from his heart of hearts, Ram, I want to be in exile. You take the throne. And Ram is fighting back. No, I will stay in exile. You take the throne. Today, brothers are all fighting for the throne. But here we find they're fighting for the other person to get the throne. That is Dharma. That is selfless love. Who is a better brother than Ram? And who is a better brother than Bharat? Yes, Ram stayed in the forest for 14 years with matted hair, wearing tree bark, staying in the deep forests. Bharat could not tolerate it. How could you live like this? From your very birth, you were brought up in beautiful palaces on the very top floor. In rooms of gold and silver and jewels, on silken beds, and every morning you were woken by beautiful singers chanting the pastimes of the incarnations of God with veenas and flutes. That's how you have been woken up every day of your life. How can I tolerate seeing you laying on the hard, cold ground, being woken up every day by the hideous roars of dangerous animals in the deep forest? Love means sacrifice. And ultimately, Ram gave his sandals to Bharat. Bharat said, if you will not come back home, then at least step on these sandals. And Bharat put those sandals on the throne for 14 years. Bharat never sat on the throne. He performed all the duties of a king, but did not accept any of the comforts of a king. When we had our yatra to Ayodhya, we visited Nandigram. It was a deep, dark forest on the outskirts of Ayodhya. In a grass hut, Bharat lived, wearing deer skins or tree trunks, for 14 years with matted hair. And never in all those 14 years did he eat any cooked food. He ate roots and herbs, cow urine. He vowed that he had to suffer more than Ram. That whatever Ram's standard of living was, living in the forest, he had to have less. Otherwise, he couldn't live with himself. Has anybody heard about a king ruling the world living like that? It was the loyalty and the love that he had for his brother.
and Ramchandra's relationship with Sita and her relationship with him, all reciprocal. She was willing to go to the forest to serve her beloved. And Srila Prabhupada explains that Ram was ready and willing to fight an entire war to protect Sita. That is the example of the love and responsibility of a husband that Ramchandra exhibited. And Srila Prabhupada is very strong that this example of Sitaram is what marriage is in Krishna consciousness. A wife, Sita said, my father, when Ram was trying to convince her, there's pages, not just a few slokas, in page after page of Valmiki Ramayana, where Ram is trying to convince Sita to stay in Ayodhya. You don't have to go. Take care of my mother. Take care of my father who's brokenhearted. You remain. I can't tolerate thinking of you coming into that forest. I'm going into the deep forest and I'm not coming out in 14 years. There's mosquitoes, there's scorpions, there's snakes, there's tigers, there's lions, there's rhinoceros, there's elephants, there's rakshasas. And Sita, you're so beautiful and so young. Every rakshasa is going to want to take you and enjoy you. It's too dangerous. You cannot go. Sleeping? On the ground? You've never seen anything but the finest silk to sleep on. Wearing tree bark on your soft, tender body? I cannot think of it. You must remain clothed in fine silks. You cannot come. Sita was weeping and weeping and weeping, begging that as your wife, it is my duty to be your shadow. Wherever you go, I will follow to assist you, to serve you, to comfort you. Who can harm me if I'm with you? Ram would not relent. He was very determined to keep her back. But when she explained that I have made my vow, in heaven or in hell, in good or bad, in health or disease, in any situation, I'm at your side to serve you. For me, to be in heaven without you would be more painful than hell. And to be in hell with you would be better than heaven. I am yours. That is Krishna conscious wife. But what is Krishna conscious husband? Sita said, my father gave my hand to you in marriage and vowed that I would not leave you. In any condition, I will not allow you to make my father a liar. I'm coming with you. And then she just practically collapsed, weeping, crying, begging. Ramchandra's heart melted, said, yes, you come.
and Lakshman, of course, there was no way he was going to stay back. Ram just absolutely protected Sita in every way. Ram was so generous in his heart that when they were living in the forest, Sita expressed, "I've never been so happy. This is better than Ayodhya." Because Ram understood Sita's predicament, wearing deerskin, I mean not deerskins, tree bark, eating these herbs, sleeping in the ground, cold winters, hot summers, rain, no shelter. Ram understood her condition physically, and he just showered so much affection, so much encouragement, so much love, and so much protection on her that she didn't feel a single inconvenience. That was what kind of husband Ram was. It's not that he said to Sita, "Well, I told you not to come." You know, if you're suffering, that's your problem. I warned you. Never said that. It's not in the Shastra. No. She came out of her dedication. He made sure there was not a moment when she was not protected and happy. He gave her so much encouragement. And Prabhupada explains when she was apprehended and when he was going to chase that deer, who was Maricha in disguise, he told Lakshman, "You stay back and take care of Sita." From Ram's side, 24 hours a day, he was attentive to protect his wife, physically, spiritually, emotionally, on every level. He was protecting his wife, even in the most difficult circumstances. That's a Krishna conscious husband. And he kept Lakshman back. But somehow or other, Ravana and Maricha devised such a plan that even Lakshman was drawn away. And no one could have drawn Lakshman away except Sita herself. But she was so concerned about her husband who was crying out for help. At least she thought so. That was her love. She was willing to risk everything herself if her husband was in need. Go and protect Ram. Forget me. Go and protect Ram. He's calling for you. And when Sita was taken, Prabhupada explains, Ram was willing to fight a world war to protect her. Ideal husband. Such an example. And friend. What was his example of friendship? Jatayu was Ram's friend. The reciprocation. Jatayu was old. He heard Sita crying from the sky. "Jatayu, Jatayu, don't try to fight Ravana yourself. You're too old. You cannot win. But tell Ram what has happened and which direction I'm going." But Jatayu couldn't stand there and allow Sita to be taken. He just jumped up. And Sita said, "No, no, you're too old. You cannot stand against Ravana." But Jatayu attacked him with all of his strength. He killed Ravana's mules, killed his chariot driver, broke his bow, destroyed his chariot. With his claws, his talons, he was ripping Ravana's back apart. With his beak, he cut off 10 of Ravana's arms, but they grew right back. And he cut off another 10, they grew right back. Started biting into Ravana's back and tearing out huge hunks of flesh and spitting it out. He was old, too. Ravana was really getting angry. And Jatayu was winning the fight. It was a heroic battle. But it was a long fight. And because of his age, he started getting tired. And when Ravana saw he was tired, he took his sword and lopped off both of his wings. Jatayu fell to the ground, profusely bleeding. And poor Sita, seeing this, she was weeping to see. Jatayu gave his life to protect me, and now look at his condition. And there was nothing she could do about it. Ravana just went. She was holding onto a tree so that Ravana could not take her, but he just took her by the hair and ripped her away. And just flew with her in the sky without his chariot. When Ramchandra came there to that place looking for Sita and saw Jatayu, first he saw this big bird with blood around, and he thought that this bird must have ate Sita, and this is her blood. And he took his bow and arrow and was about to kill Jatayu. And poor Jatayu, first he gives his life for Ram, and then Ram's angry with him and about to kill him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead doesn't always make devotional service very convenient for a Vaishnava. Sometimes he'll put us in a situation where we have to give up everything for his service. And then he'll appear that he's rejected us, just to test our love. Here is Jatayu, brokenhearted to see Sita away from Ram, to understand Ram's anguish. Fought a heroic battle, even though he knew he was going to die. But he would rather suffer and die than to stand idle when this horrible act was happening. And Ram comes, and instead of saying, "Oh, very nice, Jatayu, who is this demon who has eaten my wife? He is responsible." And Jatayu, he could hardly talk, said, "Ram, I'm Jatayu. I'm your friend. I'm the friend of your father, Dasarath. I tried to save Sita. Jatayu, this is you." What kind of friend was Ram? He reciprocated with the loyalty of Jatayu. He put Jatayu's head in his lap and cried tears of affection. He promised Jatayu that on this very day I will send you to Vaikuntha, my eternal abode. He was right there at the time of death for Jatayu to see him face to face. Ramchandra was not only giving his darshan, he was embracing Jatayu at the moment of his death.
is death.
To tie you left, seeing the Lord, chanting the Lord's name, feeling the Lord's wholehearted love, and went directly back to the spiritual world. And then Lord Ramchandra performed the last rites for Jatayu. Where do we read that a noble king from the solar dynasty is doing the last rites for a vulture? Usually a Kshatriya will never do last rites for anything but anyone except a Kshatriya or maybe a Brahmin. Not for a Sudra. And amongst birds, the lowest caste of birds, according to caste system, is the vulture. How many of you are pleased to see vultures? Did you ever hear them scream? They're not like cuckoos or nightingales. With that, vultures. I don't even know if vultures like to hear vultures. But Jatayu was a devotee. He was a Vaishnav. Prabhupada quotes that beautiful verse. Archai Vishnu Shiladirik. That one who sees the deity to be stone, one who sees the guru to be an ordinary person, or one who sees Vaishnav according to material considerations of caste or creed, has hellish mentality. Lord Ramchandra personally sent his friend back to Godhead, was with him at the time of death, and performed his last rites. Suhrita Sarvabhutanam. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the friend of all living beings. Srila Prabhupada explains that actually Krishna is the only friend. Because a friend in need is a friend indeed. And when is the greatest need? The time of death. Who can help you at the time of death? Only Krishna. No one else. No one else can liberate your soul at the time of death. And a Vaishnava is a friend only because they're representing the supreme friend, Krishna. Because a Vaishnav helps us to remember Krishna, who is the best friend. He facilitates Krishna to deliver us. Yes? How does a devotee help us at the time of death? By chanting Krishna's name. When a devotee chants Krishna's name, Krishna's there. Krishna is the one, only supreme friend of everyone. And friendship in this world, in its highest manifestation, is to connect Krishna, to connect another person to Krishna, the real friend. So, yes. Because Ramchandra was grateful to Jatayu for making that sacrifice to help his devotee Sita, as the best, most grateful and gracious of all friends, he reciprocated by being there at the time of the greatest need and sending him back to home, back to Godhead. And similarly, if we are willing to sacrifice our lives to show our love and friendship to Krishna as his servant, Krishna, the supreme friend, will reciprocate. and he will be there to take us back to his eternal abode. Lord Ramchandra was the greatest king. What an example he was as a king. He treated every one of his citizens as his own children. He'd do anything. There was no arrogance in Ramchandra. Every day he would sit on his throne and allow anybody to come up and tell him their problems. Can you imagine a ruler doing that? There would be a lot of people coming. Not many people would come because everybody was happy. But Prabhupada explains, once a Brahmin came before Ram. And the Brahmin said, "My son died. It's your fault." He said, "According to nature, a father must die before his son. Now you're the king, you're in charge. The fact that my son died before me, it's your fault. You're responsible." Now, if you said that, if somebody came up and told that to one of the heads of state in the world today, they'd be in big trouble. But Ram was so humble. He said, "Yes, what you're saying is true. It's my duty to resolve this problem." So Ram went through efforts to bring his son back from Yamaraj. That's how much he honored and served every one of his citizens. And Srila Prabhupada tells another story. The story of how one devotee, he made a vow. He would fast until he saw Lord Ram. He wouldn't even take a drop of water until he had darshan. This was his regulative principle. So one minister approached Ram, or one person, one of the townspeople approached Ram and said, "You know, this one particular devotee, he won't say anything to anyone, but I know he hasn't eaten or drinking water in days." Ram said, "Why? Everything is provided. I'll give him whatever he wants." He said, "No, because sometimes you go out of town for some days or even a week. He will not take anything in his mouth until he has your darshan." Now, Ram could have thought, "You know, he's fanatic. I'm not going to deal with that. I'm a busy man. I'm the king. I can't deal with these fanatics." Every single person he took personal responsibility for. He didn't want to interfere with this person's love for him. "You will not eat anything till you have darshan, but I go away sometimes. I don't want to see you suffer." He gave the most wonderful treasure of the kingdom, practically, to that Brahmin. There was a deity of Ram that was installed in the inner sanctums of the palaces of Ayodhya at the time of Manu. See, this is the solar dynasty. It began with Vivaswan, and the next king was Manu. And from the time of Manu, that means millions of years before, that deity was installed in the palace. And it was very much the pride of the Raghu dynasty amongst, you know. He had Lakshman give the Brahmin that deity. Giving such a treasure of their whole dynasty to one man, just so that he won't be hungry or thirsty in his devotion. That was the type of king Ramchandra was.
And we don't like to tell this story on this day.
But even that one man who was criticizing Ram was willing to part with what was most dear to him. Just to set the example of how a leader must be beyond suspicion. Very difficult for anyone to fathom this level of integrity. If we imitate, we'll fail. But why did Ram do this? He was perfectly exemplary in all of his various relationships. As a father, as a son, as a husband, as a friend, as a ruler. And we can go on, but my time is finished. To show us, by following in his footsteps and in the footsteps of his loving devotees, he has showed us the way of perfection. And simply by hearing these stories of selfless love, the desire for selfless love grows in our heart, which diminishes our selfishness, our egotism, our desire to be the enjoyer and proprietor. It is wiped away gradually by hearing about the sweet, selfless love between the Lord and his devotees. This is Ramayana. And this is why Lord Ramchandra appeared on this day. And now, Ram, Sita, Lakshman, Hanuman are personally calling each and every one of you to their temple to participate in their Abhishek festival. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi.